patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
We are thrilled to have returning to the show Toronto Blue Jays analyst and reporter for MLB.com, Keegan Matheson. Welcome back to the walk-off, man.
Happy to be here, fellas. How we doing?
Oh, so good. Great job, by the way, on getting all us baseball nerds all that spring training content we need so much. It does not go unnoticed, my dude.
No, I'm glad. People are always thirsty those early days. I think I could tweet out a video of the blurriest, most nondescript thing in the world, and it would have 1,000 shares. It's I don't realize how I guess I lose touch over the offseason, because the offseason for me is a time to get the hell away from baseball. And, you know, love it as I do. You need a break at some point. And I'm, you know, returning to spring training for baseball fans is quite exciting. For me, it means the end of a beautiful winter where I sit on my couch. And let's be real, I don't do much. So it's always, that helps get me back into the swing of things, recognizing, okay, people care about this, you know? So it's always, and, you know, if there is anything Blue Jays fans are, it is, passionate, you know, sometimes strangely so, but that's the reason people like me have these made up jobs. So it's good.
Well, I know I saw the TV ratings for that first spring training game and it was almost 500,000 people. And I was just like, that's ridiculous.
Oh, it's crazy. Right. When you compare that to other markets and what they do in other markets, I think, you know, certainly I experience it a lot that, you know, we're on this weird island up in Canada that people don't recognize the market share or the market size. But then you see numbers like what Sportsnet does, 400,000-500,000 for a spring training game. And it's difficult to overstate how unimportant the spring training game is. This is glorified stretching at this point.
And they're right up there with CFL.
Like, that is crazy. Those are crazy numbers.
No, they are absolutely crazy numbers, and it does go to show you the thirst baseball fans have after a long offseason. We've got lots of spring training talk, lots of projections for you to do, obviously, but let's start with taking a look at the past. Just last night, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, the Blue Jays announced that their icon, Jose Bautista, is actually going to be raised to the level of excellence. Obviously, not a big surprise to most of us Blue Jays fans. In fact, most of us were calling for it. And I mean, you've covered the man and watched him for many years. In your mind, where does Jose Bautista rank amongst Blue Jays greats? And what are some things that you think of when you hear Jose Bautista's name that isn't the bat flip?
Yeah, once you get past Roy Halladay, I think Bautista's right there. Because the Blue Jays have always been starved for a homegrown talent. Bautista was not that, but he's about as close as you get, because until he was traded to the Blue Jays for Robinson Diaz, I mean, whoever was on the other side of that trade must still not sleep. Like, that is wrong. He was as close as you can get for a guy, you know, late 20s who came here and blossomed, similar to Edwin Encarnacion, a lot of great late bloomers in Toronto. But what he embodied more than the baseball, I think, was the energy of those 14, 15, 16 teams that were ramping up and then competitive, which was that they had an edge. There was a real FU edge to those teams, which Josh Donaldson certainly helped with and a lot of the other guys. But Bautista, for one of the first times ever, was a Toronto star that everybody else hated, which is the ultimate compliment. When Roy Halladay was in Toronto, it's not like the rest of the league hated Roy Halladay. Yeah. Frankly, most of the rest of the league felt bad for him, saying, my God, get that guy out of there and let him win some games. It's not like Roy Halladay was pounding his chest and stomping off the mound with two middle fingers up to the crowd. Jose Bautista was that guy. You see a bit of that with an Alek Manoah. You saw it with JD when he was in Toronto. The ability to be loved in your city and hated everywhere else is very rare, but that's what makes a player stick, because Lord knows in Toronto we are desperate. I can't believe I just said we. That's horrible. Fans are desperate. You know, fans of Toronto sports, not me, a non-Toronto fan, are desperate to grab anything and consider it of Toronto or something that belongs to Toronto, because it's sometimes been a star-starved market. But Bautista was all of that. The peak that he had, I wish he'd extended that a little longer so we could have more of a Hall of Fame conversation with him, but his peak was crazy. And what he did for those teams, he dragged this team out of being irrelevant. And frankly, we underrate this at times. I certainly do. He made baseball cool again in Canada, in Toronto. That is half of the trick. You know, you've seen the Raptors do such a good job with that. It's not just about winning. It's about making your game a cool place to be. That's kind of hard in baseball, which is not always the coolest sport, let's admit. But Bautista did that. He was a reason to buy a ticket to a baseball game on some crappy teams. And then he was the star of the show and had the biggest moments outside of Joe Carter with the bat flip. I wish that this was a city that built statues. Don't have an answer for you on that one.
Yeah.
But if and when they ever do decide to, you know, do a cool baseball thing and build some statues, it's got to be Bautista as well.
I mean, that bat flip is iconic, but I mean, truly, 2010 stands out in my mind because it seemed to be the start to reinvigorating the love of baseball across this country of Canada. I mean, we hadn't seen anybody like Jose Bautista do that ever, right? 54 home runs, man. That was absolutely insane to watch. And I just, you're right, man, when you say that he just kind of put baseball back on a pedestal for the city of Toronto. And it's pretty darn cool to see that happen. I know I was on Twitter and you kind of posted a story about 2017 when you first started on the beat there with the Jays.
Let me tell that. So when I started, and Gregor Chisholm, he's now the Toronto Star columnist, loves to remind me of this. When I started, I was his intern for a year. And we got along great immediately. We're both Maritimers. He's from New Brunswick, which we try not to hold against him. It's tough. But of his many flaws, that is one. And that's back when we had an internship program at MLB.com. I was the intern that year. And like I said, I was way too eager, shirt tucked into slacks, dress shoes, clean shaven, first one there, last one out every day. Lots of fake hustle, like any good young reporter. And I remember one of my very first assignments that Gregor gave me, we were standing down in the field and he goes, all right, Keegs, we'd already known each other a few days, fast friends. He said, Keegs, I need you to get something from Jose for me. They had just come back, I believe, from a road trip early in the season. And he said, Jose, I think they've been hitting off the curveball machine. Is there anything that you can do? Maybe ask Jose about the curveball machine. So I'm eager as hell. That's back when MLB was just starting with StatCast stuff too. So I thought, oh God, yeah, I'm going to get some fancy numbers. Everyone at the company is going to be so happy about what I'm doing. So I go up and I look on the road trip. The Blue Jays had hit 180 against breaking balls. And this is over 7 or 8 games. Again, I was way too eager. And I wait for Jose. And what people don't know about our job is that most of it's standing around and waiting, either standing around waiting for a guy to come in from the outfield, shagging fly balls, waiting for a guy to finish warmups, waiting for a guy to put his pants on in the locker room so I can go over and talk to him. You know, that shoulder check, checking for pants, that's a key to my job. Jose was in the outfield for, it must have been 2 hours, shagging fly balls. And I'm standing there waiting. I had not interviewed him before. And he finally ran by. And I said, Jose, can I just have a moment with you? Instead of saying yes or sure, he just stopped and stared at me, which is a very intimidating way to say yes to an interview. Just stopped and glared at me. And I thought, oh, okay, I guess I'll start talking. And I asked him about the curveball machine, and he seemed very confused. And then I proceeded to, I asked the question something along the lines of, well, you know, on the opening road trip, it seemed like the lineup was having a little bit of trouble against just breaking balls. Is that part of why you were hitting off the curveball machine? And he looked at me and pondered the numbers for a second. And he said, there's no way to know that. And I said, thank you for your time. And he walked away. And I went back up to the press box and quickly learned that Gregor and multiple members of the beat had been looking down, watching me for the entire 2 hours, just pacing the field, about to ask a guy about a machine that did not exist and had never existed, certainly had never been used. And that was, it was nice. It was the perfect level of ribbing. Welcome to the beat. And it was 2017. So this team was about to go anyway. So we weren't ruining any relationships, but yeah, I still remember Jose looking at me and saying, there's no way of knowing that. And in my mind, I'm thinking, you know what? I might be the worst reporter in the world. This is probably my last day on the beat. This is it for me.
Oh man, I love that so much. The amount of buddies I have in the trades that always tell similar stories that, you know, they
board stretcher
apprentice to, yeah. Love to hear it's happening on the That's writing great. Side of the game too. Yeah,
hey, it was good.
Let's talk spring training a little bit. I know that some fans feel that this is a more serious team than past years, with the home run jacket being officially retired, veteran experience being added both to the coaching staff and just the team in general. What's the general atmosphere in the Blue Jays complex? Is it have you personally noticed a difference from previous years?
Yeah. A lot of the guys have used the word maturity, which I've been careful with in writing, because when you say it's a more mature team, that doesn't mean they were being idiots last year. It doesn't suggest immaturity. But, you know, certainly I think some of the players are, how should I say, leaning towards, you know, fewer Gatorade baths after wins over the Orioles in May, you know? maybe if you, and listen, I'm in favor. Throw your bat, dance, do a cartwheel. I don't care. Make baseball weirder and more fun. But, I from being around the club, I think that there might be a bit of a feeling of, if you make those things a bit more rare, they'll be a bit more aspirational. You know, they might stick out a little bit more. If you eat cake and pop a bottle of champagne every single day, your birthday's not going to feel all that special when it comes around, right? So we're going to see a bit less of that. I'm not sure if there will be a new type of jacket. Lots of teams do a chain. Lots of teams, you know, the Red Sox push you in the towel cart. It's one of those things. It's kind of like the team hashtags that they have every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things that started, and I feel like we're running out of good ideas for any of them. You know? So it's kind of like, oh God, when is this just going to stop? But you do see a bit of a more serious tone. Part of that comes with guys like Matt Chapman, like Brandon Belt, certainly Chris Bassett. But a lot of it, I think it's important to say too, comes from younger guys like Bo Bichette. You know, he you could probably notice during the Gatorade or, you know, BioSteel baths. I don't know which sponsor I'm upsetting right now. During the sports hydration beverage baths, you know, you didn't see much of Bo during that. You didn't see much of Chappie. So I think some of these guys will be a little more at the forefront of that this year. And that's really the difference. This team is good enough to win a World Series. And that's why covering baseball is tricky. They're more than talented enough to win the World Series. Teams with less talent have won the World Series before. It's about consistency, and it's about figuring out how to not blow an 8-1 lead. You know, it's learning when to pump the brakes and say, okay, deep breath. That's a couple of runs. It stops here. That's the difference between a good team with talent and a good team that actually wins. And I think you're trying to see them bridge that gap. And most of that's going to have to come mentally. You know, of course, there's holes on the roster. There's strengths like anyone. They're good enough to win a World Series, period. Easy. It's about the mental part and about growing up a bit, which, again, I don't mean they were young and stupid, but every team grows up. And a lot of championship teams have had that ugly loss before. And last year was as ugly as it gets in baseball. That was damn ugly. But maybe that's the ugly one they needed to get out of their system.
It's funny because everyone seems to take this issue and make it a black or white thing. And I think that just because they're being more serious doesn't mean this is going to be a team that lacks fun or lacks those moments, right? So, out of curiosity,
it's like a lot of people see, you know, dealing Hernandez, Gurriel, bringing in Don Mattingly. It's not going to turn into that, you know, fully like toxic athlete, you know, tweeting out business trip before every road trip, like a moron type of thing. Like it's not going to swing that hard. People aren't that serious about it, but it's a bit of a way, I think, from talking to some of the players and coaches, a way to help kind of keep yourselves in the middle. Because 162 games, I mean, I turn into a nightmare of mood swings, and I'm just sitting in an air conditioned press box, you know, like playing the games and having your own successes and failures every day. It's not about shying away from the highs and lows, but you're setting yourself up for some real peaks and valleys. I think it's a little more about staying in the middle and realizing that, you know, the celebrations are a little more fun when it's in October and not April 12th.
No more fourth inning curtain calls in playoff games.
Maybe not.
Keegan, is minor league spring training underway? Like, when are we going to see some of these guys that are getting some opportunity at big league camp kind of be relegated back to the affiliate spring training?
Yeah, pretty soon. I think these next couple days we'll see some cuts. Cuts we use loosely. Yeah. And I'll be there. When's the last time a surprising cut happened? I don't know. But you'll start to see a bit more of that. At the Blue Jays complex, field one and field two are where the big leaguers take place. It's where I spend most of my time. But then there's a field three, four, five. There's backfields just full of 18-year-olds who, there's a blur of blue jerseys. All of them are hooked up to a million electronics now and everything. It's hard to pick apart who's who. But they are all there and going through their version of spring training. Eventually, they get into games against other clubs, minor league teams, especially something like the Phillies who are close by in Clearwater. But you'll start to see more of those, and you'll still see some of them over on the MLB side late in games, which is great. You see guys like Ricky Tiedemann. I think we saw some Gabriel Martinez recently, some of the top young guys. Having a look at them in a real game, and I like it because it's at a real stadium where you can measure things. It's fun for me to go to a single-A stadium and watch them, but I'm only so smart. I need some fancy numbers thrown at me, right? So you'll see a bit more of those, but those guys are starting to roll now.
So I know obviously you don't want to judge too much the first week of spring training games, but you've been down there in person. Have there been any performances that caught your eyes, like any off the radar guys that maybe are putting themselves on the radar?
Yeah, when you look through, the guys like Tiedemann, Addison Barger are pretty high up there that people know about at this point. I think, Tiedemann being the obvious one. Barger is, I need to do a better job of reminding myself that some people have real lives and don't spend their entire brain on the Blue Jays. So, to the average fan, Barger is a new guy. I think you're going to see a lot of him this spring, shortstop, third base, and the outfield, which will be a new wrinkle to this, and I think an important one. Beyond that, though, you're starting to see a lot of those younger mid-range prospects. A couple like Otto Lopez, seeing more and more of him. I think he's in that battle for that final spot on the roster. And seeing some of the like late game prospects who could be something someday. I'm talking about guys like Desaun Brown, the Canadian outfielder, who is just stupid fast. Like he is fast, 80 grade speed, as fast as it gets. Some of those young mid-range guys who eventually could come up, a Hagen Danner, Hayden Yinger, the right-hander as well. These relievers who could factor into it. It's sometimes a bit of an easier path for a reliever or a utility infielder ranked number 15 in the system because there's a lot of ways to get onto the roster. And I think the bullpen guys especially, because this is suddenly, thank God, a bullpen from the 20th century. For a long time, when we looked at the Blue Jays bullpen, it was, oh, wow, that guy throws 95. Great. That they did that in 1992. Around the league, every other team had 10 young guys throwing 100. Meanwhile, in Toronto, there was just Nate Pearson for a while, which completely fed into the hype and subsequent disappointment and the hype again, because Toronto fans were not used to seeing 100. That's why that excitement was there. Other teams have that in spades, but you're finally seeing, and this is a conscious change from the Blue Jays player development that I think is really going to pay off. Instead of just trying to create, a bunch of decent pitchers, they are chasing that top outcome now. Like they want strikeouts, they want velocity. If that means only a few guys work out instead of a dozen, fine. You can find back of the roster guys on waivers if you're a good front office, which the Blue Jays are. Player development, I think they're chasing that superstar now, which is good. You're seeing way more strikeouts from their prospects, much more velocity. And it's going to take a few years for that to show up in the big leagues. But when you're seeing with guys like Tiedemann, Yasser Zulueta is another one, of course, right up the top. You finally see a bullpen that looks like it belongs in this year of Major League Baseball, and there's way more potential in that bullpen already.
Yeah, the bullpen is exciting. You kind of touched on it. This is the most depth we've kind of seen in this part of the Blue Jays game. You mentioned Hagen Danner. You mentioned Zulueta. Are there a couple other guys that, and we don't like to use the term injury, so we always use bad tacos, but bad tacos happen every single year. Are there guys within this minor league system that at some point are going to make their big league debut or get a sniff of the big leagues here? Obviously, Nate Pearson and probably Hayden Yinger, you said, yeah. Right?
Yeah, you look at those guys, they're all in that group. I'm trying to think going a bit further down. You do run into, there's a bit of a group of lefties in there. You think of someone like Junior Fernandez, a lot of these guys.
Right.
Forgetting Chad Green comes back eventually as well.
Right.
But it seems like even on the waiver wire ads this offseason, everybody throws 99 or they have a great splitter or there's at least something. And it's, you know, when we talk about baseball, so much of a baseball front office and way too much of baseball media, this is my number one pet peeve with baseball coverage, is people trying to sound smarter than everybody else. It's an
not act. Here, buddy, not on the walk-off.
Hey, thank God. And, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, it's better for me just to know the numbers, but then tell a story instead of cramming data and charts down your throat. Seven people enjoy that. 99% of Blue Jays fans, which are like my mom and your uncles, they're thinking, shut up. Yeah. And I think that over like recent off seasons, you've seen a few intriguing additions, but this year, when you look at every single one, you know, I don't need to get into how much their slider breaks and the tailing action on their fastball, blah, blah, blah. There's upside. In some sense, philosophically, big picture, which is what interests me because people understand it, big picture, they're chasing upside and potential. And that's exciting because whenever one of these additions happens, of course, I see 10 Twitter threads about how this guy's going to be the next Mariano Rivera. Great. But when you look at it, I simplify it to quantity. It's not all about every one of these additions. Aha, there it is. There's how this is going to work out. Get 10 of them. If one works, cool. Easy. It's what the Blue Jays have done for years, looking for another outfielder like Jose Bautista. There's always been that toolsy guy. It was Derek Fisher. It was Bradley Zimmer. Who's that right fielder I'm forgetting who also struggled but was toolsy? But there's always been one guy they've been chasing. Eventually it works. Eventually you find Jose Bautista. Eventually you find a great reliever who was crappy for, you know, up until he was 29, but all of a sudden he strikes guys out. So much of this is a game of just rolling the dice over and over. You just have to make sure it's a good dice, and their dice is much better now. They're rolling the dice on guys who throw 99. Most of them will flame out and keep being the guy they've been all along. But every once in a while, if you roll on upside, one of them will hit, and then you have a setup guy for free. And that's how you win. That's especially when you're up against a spending level like the Blue Jays are, you need to find that somewhere.
I love the way you just broke that down. Because that's the raise to a T. Right?
Totally. Exactly is the raise. Yeah. And like big brains go into it. Like there's smart people in those front offices who go into it. But it's just, I think it's, we get way too fine and focused on these things. With every signing, I'll have people telling me, well, look at his changeup. It ranked in the 97th percentile. Cool. I didn't take math in school for a reason. That doesn't interest me. You know, tell me where the upside is. What's his story and where that's from? The Rays are a great example. They collect guys that no matter what have upside. They're not out here looking for a sinker baller who can maybe give them a 5 ERA in a spot start. Like they don't care about that. They are chasing the absolute top end every single time. A lot of the times it doesn't work. That's why they churn through 1,000 guys a year. But when it does work, that's why they're the Rays. That's why they're one of the best front offices in MLB.
And it's been exciting to see this front office take that philosophical change. You know, like obviously this front office isn't perfect, but you talk about it on a player standpoint. And obviously the best players are the guys who can acquire that experience and shift and change where it's needed. And it's good to see the front office kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah, you need to chase that top end, because if you are a good, confident front office, which the Blue Jays are, and listen, I haven't agreed with every move, but I think overall they've gotten this team to a pretty good place. Mm-hmm. And you can go out and find a number 7 or 8 starter, like a Drew Hutchison, like a, you know, going down the list of who they have, Thomas Hatch, these guys through the organization. But it's about chasing the one that's going to be that free ace in the pocket, you know, and from a team that's spending a lot of money already, being able to find that is pretty important. And the Blue Jays have done a great job even in adding prospects in trades that have some upside. You even go back a while, a guy like Santiago Espinal, you know, adding those younger prospects in trades, I think is a real strength of this front office. Even when you look at deals like the Randall Grichuk trade or the Mitch White trade, there's always a little prospect off to the side that a year later you're thinking, okay, like this trade was actually about this guy. It wasn't about this guy over here.
Yeah.
So it's a real strength of this team. And I think they're chasing that now, certainly with their big moves. You know, you go sign George Springer, you add big guys like that, you are chasing something big. But it's also a team that recognizes it's hard to make that jump from good to great. You know, you're getting into a new tier where no longer is it just nice to make the playoffs. Like, if they make the playoffs this year, for me, who cares? Like, that's you better make the playoffs with this roster. You've got to win the wild card round. You've got to win the ALDS. Like, that's when you enter the conversation of, okay, this is about what it should be. It's not about creeping into the playoffs and clapping your hands and participating anymore for the Blue Jays. They need to beat the Dodgers, beat the Astros. And you're only going to do that if you are big and aggressive. Sometimes that's going to mean missing, but yeah. So what? You've got to be aggressive.
I would be happy if the Blue Jays could beat any NL team in the playoffs.
Yeah.
For whatever that's worth.
Okay, so this front office, obviously they're tight-lipped when it comes to Bad Taco's injuries. We just watched Vladdy leave that Friday game. He has since announced that he is going to be opting out of the WBC. Everyone's saying it's precautionary. There's no structural damage. Have you heard anything more on the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. injury?
Yeah, that's about it for now. That it wasn't anything structural, which is the good news. Mm-hmm. But when you are looking at a knee, number one, that's not great. Speaking from a twinge of experience, a knee for a big man doesn't make it any better. You know, if there's a lot coming down on that, especially there's a lot when you're turning a base and running. That's, I believe, where that injury happened. Vladdy had a left knee, the other knee issue back in 18 or 19 as a prospect coming up. And it matters which part of the knee. Are we talking about above the knee with the patella? Are we talking about inside the knee, below it, behind it? It's different for every guy. So we will see at this point. In a perfect world, he just needs a bit of rest, a week or so. We'll see, and he can get back in there. But if he has to fully shut down for a couple of weeks, then ramp back up, obviously you're not keeping Vladdy on the bench. But is he going to be totally sharp for pitching on opening day? It's tough timing, brutal timing, because he's a guy who really cares about playing internationally, representing the Dominican Republic on a team that is stupid good. Like, I can't – even I, a guy who does not watch baseball outside of work, will probably turn on a DR game just to see that working together.
Yeah.
But it's tough for him. Hopefully a short-term thing. But, yeah, nothing good happens in spring training. That's really my philosophy. Nothing good happens for those 45 days I'm in the state of Florida.
So fingers crossed on that. And it is kind of good to see that there's no structural damage. So you keep your fingers crossed. And it's funny when it comes to the World Baseball Classic, honestly, man, I do really enjoy it. I honestly, truly get excited for it. That said, when it comes to Blue Jays players, I would prefer they opt out every single time.
Right. I don't know what the answer is for the WBC. I wish I had one, because you're, in hockey, when you played at the end of a season. So, okay, these are just guys who got eliminated from the playoffs. Sure. But in baseball, you're dealing with pitchers who are ramping up so carefully. Now,
yeah.
40 years ago, well, who cares? They're throwing 300 innings anyways because they're throwing 89. Now, every single pitcher in Major League Baseball is doing something that the human body is not supposed to do, period. So doing more of that doesn't work, but I hope it can work out. I'm sure it'll continue to evolve, but I love watching it because you see different styles of play.
Totally.
You can see a team like the DR go up against Japan, a Japanese team much more focused on hitting for contact, for speed, always have impeccable fundamentals. And then you'll see them go up against a DR or a Venezuela who play much more power-based, big swing. There's a lot of energy to that game. So seeing those different baseball cultures go up against one another, and, you know, it's when we call baseball America's game, go to a baseball game anywhere else, you know, talk to any of these players who go play winter ball and they think, oh my God, you know, that is how baseball is supposed to happen. You know, I love talking to the guys who go down and play in the Dominican Winter League, like Nate Pearson was one. And all of a sudden you are in the bottom of the ninth. There are people banging drums. There are just full bottles of liquor in the crowd. Like, it is a good time. So hopefully we see a lot of that with the players at their best. My worry is, and, you know, knock on every piece of wood within sight, but, like, the worry is that someone like a Shohei Ohtani blows a hamstring, something like that. So really my hope for the WBC is everyone comes out of it healthy, because it can be so good for the game internationally. But it's a delicate thing if a real superstar has something happen.
And it would just create more people opting out in years to come. It's funny because, right, like it's just going to make teams cling to their stars tighter, right? Like you don't want to risk those injuries. And it is funny because even though I would rather see every Blue Jays player opt out, when it comes to Jose Berríos, he's a guy I'm actually super excited that he's pitching for Puerto Rico. And I'm hoping he builds some confidence, and I'm hoping that he goes into this season feeling like the 2021 Jose Berríos. And I know it's too early here, Keegan, to even ask you this, but this is what we're at right now in early March. Where are you on Jose Berríos, and do you expect more out of him than we saw last season?
He better. Him getting back to, and I think that a lot of people exhausted themselves on Jose Berríos last year because it was a particularly frustrating brand of struggle. If you watched Yusei Kikuchi, you would say, oh, that's not going very well. I understand. That's bad. If you walk through your living room and watch one inning of Jose Berríos, it looks okay. Like he wasn't hitting guys in the head. He was not losing the strike zone, but his fastball that was supposed to be on the edge might drift an inch over, and people were hammering him. So for Berríos, it was particularly frustrating because for 5 years, he had been one of the most consistent players in all of baseball. That's why you hand him that contract. And I'm a big believer in not rewriting history. If I love the contract at the time, that's got to be my stance for the whole time. You know, you can't go back and rewrite. I thought it was a fantastic extension. Berríos last year, I think, really, really, really took it to heart. He's a guy that cares a lot. Like, he's not there just to get his money and go on, whatever. He is a guy that's very introspective and really cared. Sometimes, I don't want to say too much, but sometimes it might have gotten to him, I believe, last year. And John Schneider said as much, that he had discussed it with the staff, with the players, apologizing for not playing his role, which he didn't need to do, but it shows you the type of guy he is. So he's also someone who cares very much about playing internationally. Like a lot of these Latin players do, coming from their countries, there is much more pride in terms of baseball internationally than we would get here in Canada or the US. It's a very important thing in baseball culture. So for him to make a run with Puerto Rico, I think would be very important. He would be at the forefront of that if it can happen, but any way to get his confidence back, because this is not mechanical. If he had a drop from 95 to 91 last year, well, yikes, then you're scared. Everything looked the same. He was just getting smacked. So I think for him, it's probably as important as almost any player in this WBC from an MLB standpoint, Berríos.
It's interesting for fans, eh? Because that was the thing that killed me about Jose Berríos, is you'd watch him and I couldn't really pinpoint what was wrong, right? Like with Kikuchi, you're like, well, he's not hitting his spots and he's shying away from that killer fastball. But Berríos, I was like, why?
Yeah. Jose got caught in a real back and forth of adjustments last year. Kikuchi too, his just didn't look as good, I guess. But with Berríos, every single start, we would hear about an adjustment of where he was standing on the mound, how he was delivering. If you're talking about adjustments like that in the middle of an MLB season, you're toast. You're absolutely toast. Because, of course, every pitcher is going to make small adjustments, but actual big adjustments to how you're throwing the baseball, good luck. Because MLB hitters are going to be one step ahead of you the entire time, if that's what you're doing. And I think Berríos, once he gets back to who he is, if he can be let's say a 3.9 ERA guy, he's durable, so you know he's going to throw 170 innings. That automatically flips this Blue Jays rotation to one of the best in baseball with Manoah, Gausman, Bassett. We'll see what happens number five with Kikuchi. But if you have Berríos doing that, of those four pitchers, you can almost write down 680, 700 innings between those four guys. And all of a sudden that bullpen becomes something you build based on what you want it to look like, not something that you're trying to patch holes and scramble with. So the effects of that could be pretty huge.
The length that we could, again, knock on wood, see out of this rotation, it is the best length we've probably seen in half a decade, I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah.
okay, it's been, honestly, I want to talk pitch clock a little bit. And because honestly, man, the gamesmanship involved in this is far surpassing what I honestly thought we would see. You know, you're seeing pitchers like Max Scherzer leading the way. We watched Chris Bassitt do it a little bit, weaponize the pitch clock, if you will, right? Induce that first time out from the hitter and then just start holding that ball for far longer than we've ever seen in baseball. Do you like the rule? And more so to that than you liking it, do you think this rule is going to be tweaked from year to year, or are we kind of watching what this is?
Number one, I love the rule. Anyone who does not like it yet will like it. I've never been more confident in something in my life. On the baseball side, I think it makes the game move quicker. It keeps, I think it's such a simple fix to one of the big problems of baseball, which is dead time. And I'm talking about the time where a pitcher's standing behind the mound, kicking their cleats in the dirt. That is a time where any fan is going to say, okay, screw this. I'm going to look at my phone. I'm going to check what's going on elsewhere.
Yeah.
Now that regular heartbeat, it moves it closer to, like, I always use the NBA as the example of a great league, both in terms of action, but also how players are marketed, personalities. It moves you closer to the constant action of an NBA game where you're not really looking away. Personally, I love it because, you know, journalistically speaking, I don't care who wins. I care that it's a quick game and there's a cool story. And this rule change will get me to, you know, a local family restaurant 20 minutes quicker every night. They're adding a drink every night for me with one rule change. This is beautiful. I'm really fascinated to see how hitters use it, though. Pitchers, because I think someone like Chris Bassitt, you can get in there, you're ready with 10 seconds left. And if you stare at that hitter until there's 1 second left, they're going to think, what the hell is this guy doing? Like, that is kind of the wild thing aspect of this that I love. You're also going to see some pitchers get rushed. Some pitchers just naturally benefit from not thinking, like Yusei Kikuchi.
Yes.
But over the years, I think in game, in terms of batter to batter, I think you'll see it stay the same. Where you might see some tinkering, and this is just from player feedback, is around, you know, between innings, or if there's a commercial break, or if there's a base hit, the time that's allowed to get back onto the mound to do your thing. Some of that still seems a little slower to get adapted to for the players, more of just the logistics around it. Once you're in an at bat, cool, boom, boom, boom pitches. But I think it'll be some of the stuff we don't see as much of. But early on, I love the rule. Most pitchers have just said, I don't care. You know, outside of Kevin Gausman with his toe tap thing, which he'll figure out. Most pitchers, I mean, Chris Bassitt especially, just essentially said, whatever. You know, I can throw a pitch every 15 seconds. It's no problem. A guy like Alec Manoa looks at it and says, you know, cool. This is another thing that I can use as my advantage. It's not going to be a huge thing. You know, I even expected spring training to be sloppier, frankly, but hasn't been too ugly so far. And it'll be part of what leads to more stolen bases, which is something that I think baseball wants, fans want. So overall, love it. I think the pitch timer is an easy win, like easy win for pretty much everybody involved.
It's funny because I'm an old man sometimes when it comes to rule changes, and I thought that I would dislike it, and I've enjoyed every second of it, honestly. I mean, you can tell the players are going to need a little bit of adjustment time, and there are going to be things to figure out, but for the most part, this is not going to affect the game near the way I thought it would.
Yeah. No, it's never as blatant as we think. I'm hoping that the clock is not too obvious on broadcasts. Like, I do not want a clock in the corner of the screen. I mean, God, no. But it's often like when we talk about balls and strikes being called automatically. When people hear the word robot umpires, I think a lot of people picture an actual robot umpire or just no umpire at all. Not enough people are picturing an earpiece and the umpire still doing balls and strikes. So it's always going to be
seeing C3PO, but totally.
Or they're hearing some, you know, there's a big screen in the back that says ball, but there's still going to be a person back there. It's still going to look like the game. And frankly, it's like any time that, you know, Instagram or Facebook doesn't update and people get upset for like 10 seconds and then you forget what the hell it looked like anyways, and it moves on. So I think that baseball for pitch timer, especially, I think people will come to appreciate even more.
Keegs, do you have a favorite stadium to cover games at?
Oh, man. I love going up to Seattle. I'm trying to think of good ones and underrated ones. Like Detroit, underrated. Like that, like a trip to like downtown Detroit. Maybe don't drive too far out, but, you know, downtown Detroit, great time. I have come around on New York. I like going to New York. I love covering Yankees games because of their media dining rooms. Tremendous spread of chicken fingers throughout the game. And this is all I care about, really. But
the spreads in New York.
The spread. They you know, they treat writers like the extremely important people we are.
All right. Sorry, I got to dive in here. Chicken fingers. Are you a dipper?
Definitely. In New York,
what's your dip of choice?
Chicken finger bar in there. They do have, like, I really like if I can get some sort of like hot honey. Like, I want the combination of some sweet and heat. I'm like, even if you get like one of those like red flake chili Thai sauces, but give me some heat. You know, sure, the plum sauce, the honey mustard is cool, but I like a little more to be happening there, you know.
French's has a new good Chipotle honey mustard.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
that's a good one.
Get honey involved at all. Like, this is like, I think the best thing to happen to pizza is the emergence of this hot honey.
Yes,
drizzle.
Agreed.
Yeah. I have one sitting like right beyond my laptop right now from last night. But man, yeah, Seattle's always a good time. I love seeing Seattle, getting out there. But man, it's we're going to see some new ones coming up. I mean, I'm starting the season in St. Louis and Kansas City, which is okay. We'll see. But yeah, New York, I always look forward to. Everyone knows I love the Trop a little bit too much, but Seattle's definitely a good one when you get out there. And it's I'm definitely biased. I judge it all on what's on the media dining room, and you know, if there's a cool dive bar close to my hotel, something like that.
I love it, man. I love it. Have you been to Rogers since the Reno started?
Yeah, we did a tour there in mid-January, and it looks cool. I'm a little more of the old school in terms of these, you know, how all ballparks are modernizing. Sometimes I look at it and I think, are these just more areas for people who don't want to watch baseball? But in some cities it is. But walking around the actual Rogers Center renovations, you know, I see how it works. So I thought, okay, this is cool. You know, like they're trying to build it into a destination, you know, something that is a ballpark, because old Rogers Center, old Sky Dome, it was cool in 1989 when a retractable roof and a big screen were interesting. They're not anymore. But, you know, Rogers Center is not too high on my list, but I like what they're doing to it. You know, it's about building a destination in the summer. And there's an incredible stretch here where the Blue Jays are away from the Maple Leafs, they're away from the Raptors. So they're trying to turn this into a place where you come and hang out. You come an hour before the game starts. You know, you don't just show up at 7:15, have a couple of drinks. You go up to the patio. There's some different spaces around there. And I think it'll work. You know, it's about attracting different demographics of fans too. Mark Shapiro spoke about that recently, about both young fans, but also fans who are new Canadians, coming to Canada and trying to get, you know, new Canadians involved in baseball. I think it's really interesting. I think it'll work. I like what they're doing. And I think when we see the full picture next year with the bottom done as well, I think it'll be really quite something. You know, the Rogers Center itself, the actual bones of it, like the concrete, the plumbing, the electricity, my understanding is that's all held up pretty good. So that's why you don't blow it up and start fresh. You have good bones in there. And I think this is going to be a pretty welcome facelift, because it's that place does get a little concrete sometimes. You know, there are times where I walk out of there after a game with the dome closed, and I feel like the mathematicians of old. I'm coming out of the coal mine, you know, just like wiping soot from my eyes.
But you survived the bombs.
Yeah. You know, so freshening that up, I think, is going to be great. And it's exciting what they're doing. I think it's going to be a pretty fresh look.
About other things other than this, and I will let you jump in here, Adam. But yeah. Can you tell us, are there going to be beer holders? Are there going to be cup holders in the 500s? That is really my biggest concern here.
Good question. We saw a couple of 500 seats, but they weren't set up with another row in front of them.
Right.
They were just, so all I did was give it the wide guy seating test, which was, you know, okay. But man, that's key. I don't go to many ball games in the stands whatsoever, but you need a holder. Like, I'm not going to be outdoors in the summer for 4 hours without a drink. Like, what? But that's key. And that's one of the things I hear from people most, is wanting the drink holders. So
yeah, which is so funny because it's really such a small part. But like, honestly, I just don't want my drink getting warm and holding it or kicking it over because I just paid $15 for it. Exactly. Right?
Okay. My question was with the outfield wall, obviously, is like the name of the game this offseason. Is there any indication, is this the absolute finished product for the wall, or is have they left the door open for any maybe tinkering if they don't like the way it plays out this year or based on fan feedback or anything like that?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I think we asked Mark Shapiro about that, and it was a good question, so I don't want to make it sound like it was me. I think it was Shai Davidi asked Mark about that. And he said that, you know, it's the door is open to that, not something they're at all talking about, but when he took a second to think about it, he said, okay, well, it's not completely closed to that, but the Blue Jays think that they have created a field that will play pretty close to neutral. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be, you know, even across the board. I think it'll be a bit more of a hitter's park, but it's not going to be, when you stack it up against other MLB stadiums, it's not going to be like, you know, something I would have created back in MLB The Show, like 04, you know, like a home run pad that's 200 feet. It'll be okay. I think you'll see different types of home runs. Like there's going to be a lot of Vladdy singles off those walls. Like those are going to be the weird ones. But then you're going to see some high fly balls, like Matt Chapman hitting high fly balls to the warning track all of April, May, and June last year. Suddenly five of those are home runs. So I think it's going to be a bit of a different type of home run ball you see. We're eventually going to break down some fancy numbers once I get my brain around the math at MLB.com to show some of last year's ones that would or would not have gone over, but it'll come out pretty close to neutral. And I think this is how you'll see it now. It's just going to be more chaotic. And that's the point that I like, is that with the weird juts in the power alleys, right center and left center, you're going to see some balls hit out there that careen off of that, rip around the wall, more triples. And that's what I think fans want, or even casual fans. You know, if you're coming out to see a baseball game, a single doesn't excite you all that much, but a crazy play in the outfield where an outfielder is running after the ball, a guy's rounding second, going for third, that's good. That's good for baseball. So I hope it's just a little messier. You know, I have to watch a lot of baseball all season.
Yeah.
And just having the odd sloppy game is what keeps me coming back. You know?
All right, Keegan, honestly, man, we thank you so much for how generous you are with your time with us always. We do have a few listener questions here. So, Adam, I'll let you just take it away here, bud.
All right. First one comes in from Sarah. Simple question. Is this Kevin Biggio for real?
Ooh, the annual question.
Yeah.
I am a believer in Biggio. It's difficult to overstate how much this organization likes him. Like if you could take Kevin Biggio's brain and instincts and put them in every player, like this is a better team. Like his instincts and how he thinks the game are pretty special. Now over the years, now has he dealt with struggles with, you know, hard fastballs up in the zone? Sure. There's been injuries as well along the way. He had the neck injury. There was one point in 2021 where he was taking a ball off the knuckles like every 3 days. He's been beaten up. But I think coming up, and I wrote this same sentence 500 times, the young core of Vladdy, Bo, and Kevin Biggio, that was kind of miscast, you know, and I was certainly part of that. But now I think you see him in the type of position he should be in, which is playing some outfield, playing some infield, moving around. He's a smart guy. He's a thoughtful guy, and he understands how this works. So it was actually him who went to John Schneider this offseason. He said, listen, I know I can be better in the outfield. I know I'm athletic. Let me try that out. You'll see him there a bit more. He needs to hit. He needs to be reaching base at that 350 clip we know he's capable of. But if he can stay, guys, a useful part of this roster, and I just mean getting every day, or not every day, sorry, every other day at bats, if he can stay in that lineup semi-regularly, I think Biggio benefits from these rule changes almost as much as anybody. Because what is he, 26 for 27 in the big leagues in stolen bases? He is sneaky fast, and he picks his spots so well. Like, he picks his spots to run as well as anyone on this roster. So I think he will be someone who thinks those new rules very well and uses his instincts. And if he can hit, he needs to reach base. There's real value there.
Okay, great. Next one comes in from Drake. Says Manny Machado's contract extension has turned his deal with the Padres into $470 million over 14 years, essentially. Who is the first player you see just straight up breaking $500 million? And does it happen this upcoming offseason or next?
Wow. I'm trying to think across the league. So many of these young guys are tied up long term. Even when you look down at the Wander Francos, the Julios, who I think are the next superstars of this game. Don't think it'll be Vladdy at that number. Not yet. Maybe not with the Blue Jays. You look at someone like a Juan Soto, which is going to be massive. Shohei Ohtani is such a wild card for me because let's take a Vladdy or a Juan Soto. You can line up all 30 teams who will be bidding on that player. Most of their overall totals, not in terms of what they would pay, but where they evaluate them. You know, they say this player is probably going to make this much. All 30 guesses are going to be pretty close. We know how those players work. For Shohei Ohtani, you are going to have a massive gap. And somewhere in there, the Mets, you're going to see a team that absolutely blows their brains out to get Shohei Ohtani. Now, what does he look like at 40? I don't know. But is he a guy that's getting 45, 50 mil a season? Because if he is, you don't need a ton of, you don't need 14 years to chase Machado. I think contracts are going to continue exploding, which, I mean, hell yeah, I want players to have money, not the owners. Good. But I think something I try to keep in mind with all these deals too, is that for someone like Machado, having that 30, 35 mil a year right now is, oh, okay, that's pretty high. By 2034, is that going to be a normal salary for a decent guy, you know? So it always surprises me that some of these salaries don't climb a bit more as the years go, or that more players don't negotiate it in terms of a percentage of, et cetera, easier to do in a cap-based league like the NFL. But by the time you get to the end of these contracts, yeah, this player is going to be beaten down. Maybe you're cutting them 4 years early, but $30 million in a decade is going to be different than $30 million today. Neither are numbers I can comprehend anytime, but yeah. If you own a baseball team, you know, if you're Steve Cohen, $30 million is like me going out to buy a single drink, you know, that's fine.
It's really interesting when you look at just the agents, right? Because we just watched Ronald Acuna Jr. fire his agent, right? And you can tell he's not pleased with it. But if you're Manny Machado, you've got to be like celebrating the fact that your agent literally put you in the place to be the highest paid player in baseball. And who would have guessed that would have been Manny Machado in 2023?
It's amazing. It's about putting pressure on at the right time. And if you are an agent like Acuna's, or you see it happen a lot with top prospects, when they'll come up with a lesser known agent and then leave them for a big name agent, that lesser known agent has to be just hot because they are losing their meal ticket for, you know, the contract they're going to get. So the agent game is fascinating and it's all about creating leverage. And in Machado's case, perfect time. You know, there were even before, you know, I'm sure as you guys saw too, dozens of stories about this is the time to extend Manny Machado. And when people are talking about it and you have a team willing to spend like the Padres who are doing this fascinating thing, which is just trying, it's a really special mix. It's really great.
Did you in a million years, Keegs, think that Manny Machado would opt out? Because that was one scenario I was like, no way.
I don't think so. But man, he got paid. Yeah. And now it's like to be on a team that good too, with that level of talent, like even I forget about Tatis coming back after all of the crap he has had going on this last while, the suspension and prior to that injuries. What a team. And what a
got Nelson Cruz too. And he looks like he's got the power in his swing this spring training. Right. Oh man. Okay. You touched on it, but this is a follow-up question related. This one's from Andrea. Is a salary cap coming next CBA?
Oh, I hope not. Even hearing CBA has me worried already. You know, 4 or 5 years.
I know we just finished the last one.
It's because when you look at owners, and this isn't me agreeing with them, this is just me thinking. When other owners are looking at what Steve Cohen's doing, I don't know if they love it,
right?
Because all of a sudden, or when you look at what the Padres are doing, suddenly if you are Cincinnati or somebody, you're thinking, well, these guys are outspending me 10 to 1. lower salary teams like that should be aspiring to be the Rays, you know, invest in development, invest in analytics, get better somehow. But I hope it continues to stay this way, because the way it is right now, I'm seeing a lot of players get paid for their value and getting paid big and getting paid early, which I hope works out in the player's favor, because I'm pro player, you know, when it comes to dollars and cents. And so I hope it stays this way. But I think that what I'll say is, looking 4 or 5 years down the line, I am not looking forward to that year, because, you know, it's now that we've gone through one, which I hated because I don't care about labor law. I care about, I do in terms of, you know, employees getting treated fairly, but it's not why I'm in baseball, to cover labor law. Mm-hmm. Once we've gone through that and you know how the language works, I think over the coming years, I think a lot of baseball fans will be a little more able to see, oh, okay, that's the canary in the coal mine for this. Oh, okay, they're really talking about a labor issue for a few years down the road. These conversations are already ongoing, and things that owners do and say are consciously done and said. So I think you're going to be able to see some strands of that over the next few years.
Gross.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, last one here, and then we'll let you go. Comes in from Jen. Blue Jays have a big decision looming at third base. I don't want your crystal ball guess as to what the Jays do this offseason. Just tell me what the Jays will do over the next 8 months to help shape their decision. Do any potential third base prospects get handled differently to maybe help the Jays decide if they can even afford to lose Matt Chapman? I can't take another season of Kevin Biggio at third base. Thanks.
Yeah, it won't be Biggio, I don't think. Matt Chapman is going to get paid. I think he has a big year this year. I think he is the exact type of guy with the exact type of mindset who can put up a big year in a contract year. I think he probably bounces back and wins a gold glove. And when Manny Machado signed that contract, Manny Machado was probably number one excited, maybe followed by his family and his agent. In fourth place was Matt Chapman.
Yeah.
Because he's looking at that. Not only is he seeing the number, he is seeing that guy off the market. And man, Matt Chapman is going to be looking at a really big opportunity next offseason. And for a guy who has the defense, has the bat, I think he's going to be big. I think you'll see a little more Addison Barger, maybe some Aurelvis Martinez, but you know, Barger especially. But man, Chapman is he's going to get paid.
There's some big money teams that need a third baseman too going into next year.
There are, when you look across that board, man. And Matt Chapman, I think, I'm trying to even think down that list.
Oh, the cool. New Yorks, right?
Yeah. Both New Yorks.
Other third baseman that will be available. And Matt Chapman's a guy that you can bet on pretty confidently. You know, he's not a flashy guy. He does what he does. He's going to get paid.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's going to make his decision to not re-up there with Oakland on that deal they offered. Going to make that look really smart. Yeah.
That is a good agent right there. Yes. Yes. Because he also would have been stuck in Oakland. So
yes. All right, Keegan. Honestly, again, man, we so love sitting down and chatting baseball with you and picking your mind. So really appreciate you taking the time. Enjoy your few days back in Toronto, and safe travels back to Florida.
Definitely appreciate it, guys. Anytime at all, but always a good time. Thank you for having me.
Cheers. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, buddy. Thanks so much, bud. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, fellas. Yeah, let me know when it's out. I'll send it out there, and then I'll go back to the couch.
There you go. That would be lovely. Right. Thanks, man. Again, right. Appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Care.
Have a good one, fellas. Talk soon.
Yeah. Have a good one, Dad.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.